I'd like to thank you all for coming. I'd like to thank Don and Richard for organizing this. I think it's going to be a very exciting meeting. It was a great pleasure to have Don. He was on sabbatical in Ann Arbor in my department last year, and he gave a very nice seminar in the department, which I gave him a very hard time, of course. So I think he probably invited me back so he could now give me a hard time when I give a talk. So please feel free to do that, Don. And with that, I will proceed. So I'm going to talk about the title, Robust Likelihood-Based Analysis of Multivariate Data with Missing Values. This is co-work, my co-author is Hyung-Jin An, who's just completed his PhD with me at Michigan, is now on the faculty at University of Iowa, biostatistics. So the idea here is to try and develop robust missing data methods based on a modeling approach and related to modeling multiple imputation. And first I'm going to talk about this approach in the context of univariate missing data, where we just have one missing variable, say y, and a bunch of x's that are fully observed. I guess there's been a lot of interest in using splines for regression, and people have proposed using splines in the context of missing data. So I'm going to talk a little bit about using penalized splines as a way of doing a robust modeling within the predictive framework. The problem with splines is that if you get to a lot of dimensions, then you're faced with the so-called curse of dimensionality. And the proposal here is to try and address that issue by a method that we're calling propensity penalized spline prediction. And so I'm going to outline what that's all about. I'll talk a little bit about variance estimation for that inference, and maybe show a little bit of simulation studies. There's actually more simulation than I have time to talk about in the half an hour, 40 minutes I've got here, so I'm probably going to skim over some of that stuff, but it's going to be available. Some of it is already going to come out in Statistica Sinica. The rest of it's not yet written up, but is in Jin's thesis, Hyung-Jin's thesis. Then I'm going to talk about extensions to general patterns of missing data and show some simulations on that. Okay, so the philosophy that I'm taking here is a pretty pure likelihood-based philosophy where I'm talking about maximum likelihood-type methods or potentially adding a prior and doing Bayesian inference. And then multiple imputation can be viewed as essentially at least the parametric version of multiple imputation can be considered as a sort of an approximation to Bayes, sort of a Bayes simulation technique for simulating the missing values. I'm sure that there are, of course, lots of other approaches to handling missing data, and I'm sure we're going to hear a number of these other approaches in the course of the conference. There are sort of approximate, pseudo, quasi, likelihood type approaches. There are weighting approaches, there are combinations of the two, and estimating equations other than the likelihood. And these are all sort of certainly possibilities for handling the problem. I personally tend to favor the likelihood approach, partly because I'm kind of simple-minded and don't understand a lot of these other approaches. And I have a Bayesian philosophy, so I like to do stuff that's strictly Bayesian. And my own view is that just the simple likelihood-based Bayesian approach is sufficiently flexible to deal with these problems. So just a little bit more on that. I mean, from my perspective, the missing data game is really the key issue is you're trying to predict the missing values. And so from my perspective, I tend to think of any method as effectively creating predictions for the missing values, whether they're doing that implicitly or explicitly. And the most direct way of doing that, from my perspective, is to build a predictive distribution for the missing values that incorporates plausible assumptions. And if you're going to do that, then that sort of leads naturally towards maximum likelihood Bayes, because Bayes basically gives you a predictive distribution for the missing values that's sort of inherently part of the inference. Of course, one of the main objections to models is that they make assumptions. And actually, I think parametric models actually work quite a lot, or quite well, in a lot of settings. But it's certainly true that, as I'll maybe point out a little bit later, in some senses, the situation where models are most useful in the missing data situation, that perhaps the situation where assumptions are most important, in the sense when you're getting away from missing completely at random, where the distribution of the covariates varies for the complete cases and the incomplete cases, then when you try and do this prediction, then you're fairly sensitive to how you specify the model that relates these missing values to the x's. So certainly assumptions are important, and of course people criticize models because they're making assumptions. I kind of like models because they make assumptions explicit, and I think that's useful. And the main thrust of this work is trying to develop model-based methods that are relatively robust. That is, if you are making assumptions, but you're making weaker assumptions than the standard sort of linear regression type things. I'm not going to say a whole lot about multiple imputation. The methods that we actually apply in this context do create multiple imputations of the missing values, and we base the inferences on the sort of Rubin's combining rules for multiple imputation. I do like multiple imputation as a method for dealing with missing data. One of the reasons I really like it is that it allows you to potentially de-link the imputation model for creating the imputations of the missing values from the analysis model. So instead of trying to build a grand model for everything and then dealing with the missing data in the context of that model, you can have more flexibility in terms of the model you use for the imputation. Just some examples where that might be useful from a practical point of view is, if you have very little missing information, you might be able to get away with a relatively simple model for dealing with missing data because you're not filling in a whole lot. So even if that model's wrong, it's probably not going to get you very badly, going to get you into too much trouble. That I think is important from a practical point of view, because if you're doing multiple imputation, that allows you to focus maybe the attention on the aspect of missing data that's most important. It does allow for uniform treatment of missing data across analyses. So if you have analyses that involve different sets of variables, then if you do a multiple imputation that create based on all of those variables, then it promotes consistency of the analyses across data sets. And then there are other versions of multiple imputation that I think may have useful roles in other settings, as hot deck methods, predictive mean matching, that are not based on explicit models, but the multiple imputation principle allows you to propagate the imputation uncertainty there, which I think is its key useful property. And then if you have a single model and you're doing multiple imputation based on a parametric model, then it has the sort of similar properties of maximum likelihood asymptotically, because essentially it's a simulation version of Bayes, which is kind of asymptotically like maximum likelihood. Okay, so that's the sort of background, and this is a little bit of notation. So I have some X's here that are fully observed. I is indexing the individual, the second subscript is indicating the variable. The X's I'm supposing to be fully observed. The Y's have missing values, and then I have indicators, R's, for whether the variable is observed or missing. And so I'm going to start by just talking about univariate missing data. So we have one Y that has missing values, and then say KX is X1 up to XK. R1 is then the indicator for whether Y1 is missing. And so a simple model-based prediction for the moment, actually throughout this talk, I'm really going to assume missing at random, so I'm actually not going to get into non-ignorable models, although I actually feel it's relatively easy to adapt these methods to deal with non-ignorability, but I'm not going to talk about that here. So under missing at random, the distribution of Y given X for R1 equals 1, that is for the observed cases, is the same as the distribution of Y1 given X for the incomplete cases, so in particular the mean is the same. So you could estimate the mean of Y1 given X using the complete cases, and then predict the values of Y for each incomplete cases by just a prediction estimator. So that's a simple version of model-based prediction. It's actually more the maximum likelihood version of the thing. A very natural and fairly straightforward to implement kind of approach would be to say, well, let's just do a linear regression of y1 on the x's and then fill in the prediction from that linear regression. So that's just a linear regression imputation. And that corresponds to maximum likelihood for the mean under a variety of models, including the multivariate normal model. You don't really have to assume normality for the x's here, but the key point is that you're assuming linearity for the regression of y1 on the x's. Now, in general, actually, I'd rather you do a draw from the distribution of y1 given the x's and do multiple imputation, because from my perspective, that's Bayesian, and I always think Bayes is better. But I'm not going to get into that argument here, but so I'm not really going to make too much of a distinction here, but it's about whether you're doing a mean or a draw. But in general, I think I like draws better than means, but that's all I'm going to say about that at this point. Now, this is sort of the issue about sensitivity. So if you're just going to fit a straight line regression, let's suppose there was a single x here. So we have a single regression of y on x here, and we're fitting a straight line to that thing. And so that's the blue line. And let's suppose that the real regression was some nonlinear thing like that red line. If the data are missing completely at random, that is, if missingness doesn't depend on the x's, then even though you're fitting that wrong line, you still get a consistent estimator. But if the distribution of x's is different for the complete and incomplete cases, then the fact you're fitting a wrong regression line has an implication in terms of bias. I think it's fairly clear that I can't draw well enough with PowerPoint to do this, but if you had some distribution that was different for the incomplete and complete cases, then you're going to get a bias by using the blue line rather than the red line. So that's this issue of missing completely at random versus missing at random. Sensitivity model specification is most important when the data are missing at random. Now, on the other hand, when a data is not missing completely at random, that's a situation where doing a regression adjust, where using the incomplete cases is most helpful. Because if you're trying to estimate the distribution of y and the data are not missing completely at random, then complete case analysis is biased. And in fact, I would argue that in that case, this is probably going to be better than complete case analysis, even if the regression is not linear. Simply because you're doing something with the x, which is better than throwing them away. On the other hand, it would be nice to do something that was good with the x, so you didn't have bias, using all the data as well. So let's suppose we just wanted to relax the linearity. Then a simple way to do that, I mean, I'm really talking very simple sort of methods here. I don't want to do anything very complicated. Well, if you're going to do something very simple, you might just categorize x. So you just create some cut points for x and then treat that as a categorical variable. So then you just estimate, just sort of separately within each adjustment cell based on categorical x. And of course, if you do that, the model-based prediction you get from that is actually the same as what you get if you weight by the inverse of the response rate within the categories. So that leads to a direct correspondence between weighting estimates and prediction, regression estimates. Well, we might not like the idea of fitting a step function to x. So we might, well, now we can do all these clever stuff is with clever stuff with splines. We've even got software around and do so. I can do it without having to worry about software. So let's do a spline. So we could fit this model here. So now I'm going to use S just as sort of generic thing for spline. And the sort of splines that we're doing are these kinds of splines. So you have a polynomial here. Actually, we're just using linear. So we're just doing Q equals 1 here. So you fit linear, and then you have these higher order terms. And then you have these cut points, tau k, and so this is allowing for local higher order polynomials, and then the phi's here are then given distributions which treats them as random effects. So that gives you the smoothing of the spline function, and so this is penalized splines. You don't have to motivate this as being Bayesian. You can just motivate it as this is a penalty function you're putting on the polynomial. But these things are extremely easy to fit these days. So in fact, you can do this with prop mixed or standard props, and it actually does a pretty nice job of smoothing it out. Now, I'm not doing anything very complicated here. So some people worry about trying to estimate where to put the knots and all that kind of stuff, which all gets too complicated for me. So my view, I follow people like Matt Wand, who do good at this stuff, and I think Ray Carroll also likes this. Just have lots of knots, have them at fixed places, and then let the shrinkage sort of take care of the over-parameterization. So that's the way we do stuff. So. Okay, so that does pretty well with a single X, and so I'm kind of assuming here that X is continuous. By the way, I mean you could sort of build in categorical X's, but then you get to sort of more the adjustment cell type approach. What happens if you've got lots of covariates? So then, well, you could do this spline over the k dimensions of the X's, but you know. Jamie and others are worried about that, and I think there is a sort of dimensionality issue with doing that. I don't think you can really fill the space very well given the amount of data you've got. So the question is how to deal with the curse of dimensionality. And so I'm trying to achieve get the robustness in there and deal with the curse of dimensionality when you've got a lot of X's without doing things like trying to calibrate the model, which Dan actually has a nice paper. Dan Isnari, it's coming out, out now, right? Biometrics, that talks about a calibration approach where you weight the residuals to get double robustness. Well, I'm trying to do something a little bit like that, but I'm trying to do it within the modeling framework. Okay, so this is the idea. The point of propensity p-spline prediction is to focus on a particular function of the covariates that's most sensitive to model specification, namely the propensity score. So the propensity score is the probability that y is missing given the x's. And the point is that if you condition on that propensity score and then look at residuals, take the residuals from the x's, the residuals from the y, and then work in the residual space, then essentially in that residual space you're missing completely at random. Because the propensity score dimension sort of takes away all the bias, all the missing at random part from missing completely at random. So the idea is to model on the propensity correctly using a spline, and then take the residuals, but then model the rest of it parametrically. Because the idea is that conditional on the propensity score, then the x's are balanced with respect to respondents and non-respondents. So misspecification of the regression in directions orthogonal to the propensity score is less important. It results in a loss in precision, but it doesn't result in a loss in bias. I'm talking about estimating the mean of y at the moment. It's more complicated if you're looking at other functions of y, but for the moment I'm just looking at the mean here. So you can actually write a model for that. So here I have x1 up to xk, and then I have a single y1. And then, so x1 star is the logit of the probability that y1's observed. And you have to model that. I have to make some assumptions in that model. But then, once you've got that, I'm essentially tracing x1 by this x1 star. And then the second part of the model is to take the other x's and then regress them on spline functions of x1 star. So this is xk star is then sort of in the residual space from the spline from x1 star. So I'm then going to replace the x2 up to xk by these xk stars. And then I'm now going to model y to be. So this is the spline on the propensity score, and then this part here for the other x's, there's this parametric function indexed by psi that has the property. The only thing that we really need here is that when these are set to zero, this function has to be equal to zero. Now I'm going to model them as just linear regressions in x1 up to x in x2 star up to xk star. The interesting thing is that you don't really have to assume linearity here, so you can put interactions between those things in as well. The only condition is that G has to be zero when the X stars, the centered X's, are equal to zero. What's happening? Oh, I guess I have to do that. So this method does have a kind of a robustness, double robustness property. It's actually it's a little weaker than the double robustness property in Dan's stuff, in a way that I'll explain. So this yields a consistent estimate of the mean if the regression of y1 on the x's is correct. So if you have the regression model for y1 on the x is correct, then obviously you're going to be okay. So that's not really the interesting part. The other part is, or b, if the propensity is correctly specified and the regressions of the other variables on x1 star are also correctly specified. Now the b2, now that the calibration estimators only require a and b1, so they don't require b2, but the idea here is that the b2 is mild because I'm doing them by splines. So since I'm doing spline regressions, they're all univariate regressions on x1 star, and since I'm fitting smooth spline functions there, the additional assumption that's needed here is not really very strong. And my view on the calibration type estimations is that if you have the regression correctly specified, then calibrations are necessary. And in simulations, we've shown that it really doesn't make much difference. It doesn't hurt you a whole lot, but it doesn't help you a whole lot. And so my strategy here is basically to get the regression to be relatively weak assumptions about the prediction part, and then not worry about the calibration. All right, so so then you get these predictions, and then you have to get estimates of variance for the estimator that deal with the added uncertainty to non-response and the added variability from estimating the propensity, because we have to estimate this propensity score to start with. And you can just apply standard, it's a kind of a mixed model, large sample standard errors, to this model. On the other hand, that's ignoring the sampling error in estimating the propensity scores. The variances from that tend to be a little bit underestimated, since there's some variability in estimating these propensity scores. You can bootstrap the whole thing. I'll skip over that, so that's kind of obvious. Just bootstrap the whole procedure. That's all that this is saying. Or you can express this as a Bayesian model. So you can have priors and then write down this model from a Bayesian thing, and then multiply impute the y's based on this Bayesian thing. When you're multiply imputing the y's, you can get different propensities being estimated in each multiply imputed data set, so you can propagate the error from estimating the propensities when you do this. And so there's a lot of equations there. I'm just trying to give you the basic idea. Then you can apply, so you create M sets of missing of imputations of the missing values, and apply Rubin's approach. This is actually not quite fully Bayes for an interesting reason that I'm not going to go into, but it's very close to being Bayes. Another way of propagating the error in the propensity part is to create the propensity on a bootstrap sample. So for each multiple imputed data set, you first bootstrap when you're creating the propensities, and then apply the rest of the procedure conditional on the parameter estimates obtained from the bootstrap sample. So this is a slight variation of full multiple imputation that sometimes you think of this as being lazy proper multiple imputation. It's to incorporate a bootstrap into the estimation of the parameters. And we actually looked at that method as well. How much time do I have here? I think what we did actually, I don't really have time to go into these simulations very much, but we did some, this sort of give you a sort of idea of the kind of simulations we're doing here. We have here a couple of X's. We have a mean structure that's linear, additive, or non-additive. The reason why we're looking at non-additive structures is that if you have an additive structure of y and x1 and x2, you can fit an additive spline, and the additive spline actually does well. I mean, this does pretty close to it, but in some senses that's sort of the best thing you do. So, we wanted to look at some non-additive cases as well to give this method a chance to beat in a sense, the optimal approach if you really had additivity and Y on the X's. And then we have done some simulations on different parametric specifications of the response propensity, but for the purposes of this inference simulation, we were just looking at an additive logistic model for the response propensity. And just in terms of the methods, before deletion, we looked at a complete case estimator, linear prediction, additive spline, p-spline prediction estimator, and this propensity p-spline estimator. But we're actually more interested in the variance estimation methods, and so we had a variety of ways of trying to estimate the variance. And we looked at things like average widths of the confidence intervals and coverage rate of the confidence intervals, and then estimation things, bias, standard errors, that kind of stuff. So I'm not really going to go over these tables because I want to say a little bit about the more general method, but you can just a couple of points here. This is single imputation, so the under coverage here is reflecting the fact that you need to do it multiply to get the coverage to propagate the imputation error. This is the case where you have a linear mean structure, so the linear prediction does probably better than anything else, which is as you would expect, since it's kind of optimal. Then if you look at, this is the additive mean structure, and here the additive spline does very well, as you would expect. This also does pretty well. If you look at the coverages over here, you can see these coverages are all pretty much around 95%, although it's a little bit less efficient than doing the additive spline.
Yeah, it was 4.8%
of the top. So this is non-linear, and we're doing a linear prediction, so it's completely hopeless. Yeah. These are actually fairly extreme, actually, predictions here. They're really demanding. They're very good predictions, and they're non-linear. This is not missing completely at random. So you get a lot of bias by doing linear prediction. So I don't think that's a fair representation about how bad the linear prediction would do in practice, because it would be unusual that you have such an extreme situation. But we are trying to sort of look at fairly extreme things here to make comparisons. And then this is non-additive and non-linear. And so here, sort of everything's horrible up here, and the PPSP method has good coverage apart from the single imputation method, which is okay. Now I wanted to say a little bit about a general pattern of missing data. Now for a general pattern, in a sense, since I'm a Bayesian, I kind of like the idea of doing a full model for the joint distribution of Y, assuming missing at random, and then basing the multiple imputation or maximum likelihood on that coherent model. So I mean the obvious example in the literature is just the multivariate normal model, and doing maximum likelihood for a multivariate normal model with missing data has been in the literature for a long, long time. So it's very well established. And it's principled, but on the other hand, if you assume multivariate normality for everything, you're assuming all these regressions are linear, and we're trying to do something that's more robust. Now, in terms of generalizing this, it's actually pretty complicated to do a fully principled Bayesian approach to the joint distribution, because you've got all the conditional distributions sort of have to match up together. So if you want to make one of the regressions to include an interaction on the other variables, then it becomes a mess when you look at the joint distribution. Now my colleague Raghunathan and some other folks in Europe too have proposed this sort of sequential multivariate imputation, where you do multiple imputation, where you just focus one variable and then build a regression on the other variables, and then do multiple imputations for that variable, and then you take the next variable, and then conditional on everything else, you do a multiple imputation of that variable, and then you just sequence across, as in the style of the Gibbs sampler. The difference is that in the Gibbs sampler, you're not being totally principled about it, because you're allowing for non-linearity and interaction. You're allowing for non-normal distributions and things, depending on the type of variable. And this is a very flexible. The problem with this method is who knows what the theoretical properties of the thing is, and so you can't. It's pretty hard to establish, you know, that the thing converges to a stationary thing or whatever. But from a practical point of view, it's really nice. It has this real nice flexibility built in because you can allow for non-linearities and everything. So in some sense, from a practical point of view, it seems to me it actually could be better than being principled. So this is the method we actually adapted, the propensity spline idea, because it's fairly clear that once you're doing this, this sequence of regressions, that you can also include a propensity into those regressions. So you basically take a propensity for each variable, you calculate the propensity for that variable you're missing based on all the other variables. You then include the estimated propensity in there, as I've just shown you for the univariate case, and then you predict a draw based on that. Then you go to the next variable, take the propensity for that variable, and then and then do the same thing, conditional on everything else also. So it's sort of the logic of the Gibbs sampler, but with the propensity built in there to get you some robustness. So that's essentially, without going through all the gory details, that's essentially what we're doing here. So I'm not going to go into all this stuff. So maybe I'll just show you a little bit of... So the idea is to incorporate this p-spline regressions into the sequential imputation approach. So that's what these equations are doing. So I just wanted to touch on a couple of simulations, then I'll finish. Might even finish ahead of time. So here's a simulation. So we have two x's here. So this is the propensity that R1 is observed, the propensity that R2 is observed. And we simulate a case where one case where these logistics are approximately linear, and we also simulated a case where they're not linear. Now you have to sum over the different patterns when you're doing this. So there's some subtleties in actually modeling the response indicator part of this, which I'm going to gloss over in the interest of time, although they're sort of in the equations here. But then we did some simulations where so we have one situation where the propensity model is approximately correctly specified. Then we have linear additive and nonlinear additive and nonlinear non-additive mean structures simulated, and then we looked at different methods. So here's sort of simulation one. So there are two x's. And then y given x is, so there's a linear model, so there's a linear one, that's one that we simulated. There's an additive model where the relationship between y1 and y2 and x1 and x2 and y1, y2 on x1, x2 and y1 are both additive in the x's and y's, but not with no interactions. And then we looked at a non-additive non-linear model. So there are interactions now between X1 and Y1, X2 and Y1. So, and then this is the mechanism for creating generating the missing data. So P10 is the probability that R1 is 1 and R2 equals 0, and P01 is the probability R1 is 0 and R2 equals 1. And then we didn't allow P00 here, so the other one is 1 minus those two. Oh no, we did allow P00, take it back. So this is the probability that they're both missing. And then P11 is 1 minus those. Just an aside about this, we've actually, in the general pattern case, we've actually found instances where people screw up missing at random, because it's a little bit more complicated than people think, because you have the joint distribution of R1 and R2 here, and quite often people have sort of not quite got that right. So you have to be careful in a multivariate case, I would say. And percentage of missing values. So this is some methods when the propensities are correctly specified, and you have a linear model so the y's are related to each other. Y1 is related to the x's and y2 is related to the x's and y1 in a linear fashion. And so this is a case where linear prediction does very well in terms of the coverage. It's 97% coverage for a 95% interval, and in terms of the estimate, it's actually efficient here, very, very efficient. More efficient than this is the spline, additive spline thing, and this is our thing here, which for some reason is more efficient than this here. I'm not really sure why, but I would expect it to be fairly similar. Then this is where the propensities are correctly specified. You have an additive model, but it's not linear, and so here, complete case now. So linear prediction actually still does pretty well here. It's sort of a way the way things are organized, how things are simulated really matters here. But here this one does pretty well because this is the additive propensity spline. The additive spline here is a good method. And it's actually more efficient than our method. But then when you have a non-additive structures, then our method tends to do the best, or for some reason linear is actually doing quite well here, but you can see that relative to the this is assuming additive regressions, this is our propensity spline method in terms of coverage. You can see it's a lot better. Yeah. For the coverage from what? Yeah, it's over covering. You know, it's only 200, so the 91% coverage is probably okay. These are fairly recent simulations. I haven't studied them in a whole lot of detail, but you're right that for this particular case, this actually has good coverage, although it's actually rather inefficient compared to this. The estimated standard error here, the empirical standard error. But for this, it's actually lower than this, so it's more efficient somehow. But no, the coverage is here arguably a little low. It's true. And then this is okay. So we did this one. Okay. Now the second simulation was sort of similar, but here the propensity method, the propensity model is not being correctly specified. So we also looked at some situations where we didn't get the propensity right. And similarly fit these three linear, additive, nonlinear, and nonlinear, non-additive mean structures. And I'm not going to show the detailed specifications here, but here the propensities are designed in such a way that doing a linear propensity score doesn't work very well, because when you sum these two probabilities, you get something that's nonlinear. And here, this is the case where where you have additive regressions, additive linear regressions. So linear prediction does pretty well here. These methods all look pretty good. Notice the complete case method is a total bust here, since it's very biased. Then we have propensities incorrectly specified in an additive but nonlinear mean structure. And here, the additive spline is actually doing well here. But now you notice that our method is not doing so well. That's because the propensity is not being correctly specified here. Linear is not doing very well. And then the third case is non-additive with the propensity incorrectly specified, and basically nothing kind of works that well in this situation. Okay. So just to conclude, I've shown you an approach that's conceptually very simple, in my view. I mean, the details might be fairly complicated, but the thing I like about this is conceptually I see it as being very simple. I'm just using models, trying to use robust models, and I'm just trying to fill in the missing data using multiple imputations to propagate imputation error. So the idea is to try and make models more flexible and more robust to avoid issues, to try and get around issues of model misspecification. Key idea is to look at this response propensity score direction and then focus the robustness stuff or throw the parameters in that direction to achieve robustness there, and then being more parametric in the other directions. You might ask, why am I including the other directions? Well, the point is that even if the other directions are incorrectly specified, I can increase precision by including them as covariates. And we've shown that in some earlier simulations. These are fairly recent simulations, so I haven't absorbed them as much as I should have done. But in general, simulation studies show that the PPSP method works quite well over a wide range of population structures when the propensity is correctly specified under the missing at random assumption. We also did some earlier stuff just for a univariate Y, where we actually did do comparisons with the calibration approach, which I haven't shown you here. And basically, if you have this non-parametric prediction structure, then the calibration doesn't really hurt you, but doesn't help you, really. Basically, you get fairly similar results. Sometimes it's worse. Overall, I'd say it looks a little bit worse, but not really anything to worry about. So with that, I will stop, and thank you for your attention.